Hello, welcome to Unreal Bluegrass. I'm Steve Martin, your host. Our guest today in the second hour is Barry Waldrop. Barry's here to talk about his brand new album just released the day before Christmas. The name of the album is Barry Waldrop and Friends, Tribute to Tony Rice. It's an amazing effort. It's an amazing concept. And you're going to find out how Barry put this together and all the guest artists. We're going to talk about them as we get through the album, discuss it. We're going to play three cuts from the album, all chosen by Barry. We'll start it off with the very first cut on the album, which is, you'll know this right away, from Tony Rice. Fans out there, all of you are, why you've been gone so long. To the audience of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard a great cut from Barry Waldrop and Friends celebrate Tony Rice. The tune, the very first cut on the album is Why You've Been Gone So Long. And I have Barry on the phone with me today to talk about this really incredible, what an effort. Barry, first of all, welcome to Unreal Bluegrass.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
I'm doing good. This album, I just think, what a task. What a task to take on. And you did it so well with so, there's so many guests. If I just read through the list of all the incredible superstars that are helping you on this, we'd be out of time. I mean, it just goes on and on and on, but let's, since we started with Why You've Been Gone So Long, which is another great recognizable tune that Tony lent his skill to, talk a little bit about that song, why you chose that as the first album, first cut on the album. And then I want to get into how you conceived of doing this project.
Well, choosing that song, I didn't really know that it was going to be the first song on the album when we recorded it. Jimmy Hall was actually the first guest in the studio in 21 that we recorded, and I, you know, just had a vision for this song for Jimmy to sing, and when Jimmy came into the studio, he was asking me, he said, well, I'm really not sure what direction to take on this song. And I said, there's only one thing to do, and that's to go be Jimmy Hall. And anyone who knows Jimmy Hall, you know, from Wet Willie, he's the lead singer of Jeff Beck as well.
And sure.
He puts his own spin on anything he does. It's always great. So that was the way that happened. And then it just kind of, after all the songs were recorded and all the post-production stuff, you know, everything has to flow in my mind. I just had to really just sit down and study everything to see where I wanted the placement to go with all the songs. So, and that just felt like a good way to start this album off.
It's such a, I just can't imagine the task. By the way, for the listeners, when you mentioned Wet Willie, I remember them very well. If the listeners think back to the time of the Allman Brothers Band and maybe the beginning of the Charlie Daniels Band back then, and then Lynyrd Skynyrd, kind of, it was all this whole Southern rock, and Wet Willie was kind of part of that. I always put it
Absolutely.
On that classification, but
yes.
They had some great records, man. They had some really smoking records and great vocals. So it's nice that Jimmy's still around, still singing, does a great job on this one.
Oh, he's still a powerhouse, for sure. He's just, he's great, for sure.
That's just one of the names. There are literally, let's go through, I'll talk about some of these songs as we come up, but the list of guests you have on this, it just covers the whole front of the album release. You have enough room for the name of the album, and then just the list of guests is three-quarters of the face of the album cover that I have, and it should be that way, but man, you just pulled in so many great people.
Yeah, it was, and you talk about the task. I mean, when you see all the names on this album, you know, generally you would look at this and say, well, I might get this done in 5 years.
And Barry, that's if you can get those people to come in.
Well, honestly, it's one of the easiest projects I've ever done as far as the logistics and everyone responding and really wanting to be involved. It was just a 100% positive thing. It was great. It was really easy. All the people that I worked with on this, they were great. It was just a fun thing to do. And I think, you know, it's going to expand Tony's music and his reach.
Well, off the air, we talked a little bit, and if you're just tuning in, I'm talking to Barry Waldrop about this. Really, just an overwhelming task and a great result on the album of Barry Waldrop and Friends Celebrate Tony Rice. Off the air, we were talking a little bit about you can't do an album. No human being can do an album as a, I'll use this distinction, as a cover band to try to cover Tony's music and singing and playing style. But what you've done is a tribute to all those songs with other people, you and all the guests you have, putting their artistic talents into interpreting those songs that are so recognizable with Tony's voice and playing.
Yes, the whole direction in my mind was, well, first of all, this whole thing started about 7 years ago with one song. And, you know, I was asked to come into the studio and record a track in tribute to Tony at that time, just with me having one track on the album. And I had John Cowan and O'Till Burbridge and Benji Shanks with me, which was the track Me and My Guitar. So we cut that song in Nashville.
Just for the listener, O'Till Burbridge, bass player, right?
Yes, he was the bass player for the Allman
Brothers
Band.
Yeah.
He now is the bass player for Dead and Company.
Yeah, that's right. So I knew that name, and I remember seeing him, and very musically talented, plays a little bit of banjo, I think, because he was taking lessons from Tony Trish.
He does. Yes, absolutely.
Okay, I'm
That's
sorry.
That's wild you say that. O'Till and I and Tony Trishka ended up in a jam backstage at an Allman Brothers show at the Beacon Theater in New York City. It was a pretty wild time.
Well, I didn't mean to distract you, but I like the audience to understand these names as they're coming out. Of course, they all know John Cowan, but O'Till, I know from that connection with Tony and also from the Allman Brothers Band back in those days.
Right.
So, all right. So you had done this song, Me and My Guitar. And we were talking about that, and I got sidetracked on some of the names because I try to inform the listeners. There's all these incredible talent coming through. So, all right, you did that for a tribute, and then at some point you're recontacted to what, either release that song or somehow you get the idea to put a whole new album together.
At that time, no one, something happened, you know, I don't know what happened, but the album was never released. Nothing ever happened with that. But we had that song in the can, so it sat for 7 years, and in February of 21, Brian Smith, my manager, called me and suggested that I dig that track back up and release it as a single in tribute to Tony. And the more I thought about it, I thought it would be really cool to do something that was really, really heavy to tribute and honor Tony. He was a huge influence on me growing up, and I just thought it deserved something really big. And the thing is, there's tons and tons of bluegrass players out there that would be great featured artist on an album in tribute to Tony. So
sure.
I'm not bypassing those people whatsoever, but my intentions with that with this album was, as I have made my living in the jam band world mostly, but I grew up with those hardcore traditional roots with Bill Monroe, the Stanley Brothers, and that kind of thing. So I'm thinking and I'm processing this, and I'm thinking, what could expand Tony's reach the most?
Exactly.
And so I thought, if we had all the featured artists be from outside the bluegrass world, who they all were familiar and influenced or knew Tony's music. So when people would, you know, listen to Jimmy Hall or listen to Vince Gill or John Cowan or any of these artists, and they might not know who Tony was. But then they said, well, Vince Gill's doing one of Tony's songs that he did. I'm going to reach out and find out who Tony is. It's just expands.
Yeah.
So,
Barry, I have to tell you this, and I don't mention often about the show Unreal Bluegrass, but one of the reasons I call it Unreal Bluegrass because I don't want to get caught up in what is real blue. I don't want to get caught up in that. But my intention is often to do exactly this. I love the way you're expressing this, because sometimes I'll play an artist or have an artist as a guest, and you may not immediately recognize them. as being bluegrass, but if you track back in what they're talking about and what they're doing, Don McLean, been on the show a couple times, the American Pie guy, loves banjos, loves bluegrass. And he talks it, and people are saying, well, why would you have Don McLean? Well, listen to what he's doing, and here's the old songs where he's a banjo player. So I think that's great to kind of cast that net out there and it, see who you pull back in. So I think this whole project that you've done with the tribute to Tony Rice is just, man, that's exactly what it is. There's 21 cuts. It's exactly a great attempt at say you like this guy, come in and guess where it came from. Guess where his influence was. When you talk about Vince Gill, we're gonna play one of his tunes before we get out of here. But this whole album, there's so many great people. And again, let me just say this, and I'll get tired of myself talking here in a minute. But Tony was almost always doing covers. You know, he did the Gordon Lightfoot. I think sang better than Gordon Lightfoot did, my personal opinion. And he did a whole album of Gordon Lightfoot music. So he was kind of always doing covers and making them his. Freeborn Man kind of became more recognizable with him probably than anybody else. So this is really, I'm coming back to you on this, is really the only way you can do it. What you're doing is, what you're explaining is exactly perfect for how you cast that wider net of Tony Rice out to new audiences, because you've got so many great musicians from different categories on here.
And think about this. Wouldn't it be cool if you have someone who's listening to Motley Crue also listen to Tony Rice?
Yeah, exactly. That's
so Jacob Button, who is on this album, he is a heavy, heavy metal rocker. I mean, he's actually the singer for Mick Mars from Motley Crue. And I met Jacob about 20 years ago, and he was at one of my shows. And after the show, he'd come and ask me if I would play banjo on his new record. And just looking at him, you know, 6'4", really, you know, slender, you know, jet black hair with painted fingernails and chains everywhere, you know,
okay.
And I could imagine what this was going to be like. And that really, really excited me to be able to play banjo on what I was anticipating this record to be like.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that. It was a real cool thing. He and I became really good friends. And so he started asking me questions about guitar players and all this kind of stuff. And the first thing that I turned him on to was Ricky Skaggs and Tony Rice and that album.
Yeah.
And he just started really, really, you know, getting into flat picking guitar and really, you know, researching the history of those two guys. And that's, you know, actually More Pretty Girls Than One was one of the tracks on the Skaggs Rice album.
Yeah,
that's the cut that Jacob's doing on this album.
Yeah, the album was Skaggs and Rice, you mentioned. Yeah, that's a great collection. That's when they were both going for that really tight harmony and almost that Ralph influence. I think Ricky was still, and it just, yeah, they're perfect bluegrass. If you want to introduce someone to bluegrass with Tony Rice, a great guitar player, Skaggs and Rice is a beautiful choice.
Absolutely, yeah, and it's just, that's my whole point there. You know, first, you know, he came to my show, so through me and playing on his record, he got to know about Tony Rice. So that's the thing that I want to do with this album. I would really, really, you know, hope that the bluegrass world would respect the fact of what we're trying to do to expand the reach of a bluegrass icon. And it's just like the more fans you have of bluegrass,
exactly right,
the better. So you need to find new avenues to get that out there. So I'm really, you know, I've always been open-minded about it. And the two people that I can, you know, attribute to, you know, letting me know that I could step outside the line, so to speak, is Tony Rice and Charlie Daniels. Because growing up in that traditional bluegrass world and listening to Tony play a guitar that was outside the box, and then hearing Charlie Daniels play fiddle in a rock setting, it's like, man, you know, I can do anything that I want and step out and create good music and make it happen the way that I hear it and be okay.
That's great. And Charlie Daniels, I happen to allude back because you mentioned Wet Willie, but yeah, you're right. He had that fiddle in the Charlie Daniels band, which was a very hot. Of course, he's a great guitar player too, but he also brought in the fiddle to that Southern rock sound that was very distinctive. It was different than everybody else because they had Charlie's voice in it. But yeah, he actually has a great. He did an album several years ago of Bob Dylan tunes, where he's using his band, and it's all bluegrass, basically bluegrass. I had him on the show then, but Charlie's like, he used to play stand up bass for. Help me with this. He was a stand up bass for. Gosh, he was in the studio. He was doing some bluegrass work way back in the days when he first went to Nashville. So that's kind of a nice full circle for him around.
Right. And, you know, it's just when you can do those things, you know, most people that I know that I've run into in my career that are not from bluegrass, once they get a little taste of it, they want to know more about it. They want to hear and be able to play that. And, you know, the whole feel of playing bluegrass is so different than playing anything else. And some people can't hear it.
Right.
But, you know, O'Teal Burbridge is a prime example. When O'Teal, you know, I went to his house one day and we were just hanging out. And he's sitting over there on the banjo. And he's doing all this, you know, just crazy rhythmic things on the banjo that was inspiring to me. And I wanted to do that. And he said, oh, man, that's nothing. He said, I want to play like Earl Scruggs. And, you know, so it's just, you know, anytime you get an inspiration from someone else, you know, that just expands everything.
And if you can help the listener back, I'm talking to Barry Waldrop if you just tuned in to Unreal Blue, and if you can take that and help them expand it back and go back to the sources that we all had, that you had, and then they recognize, yeah, there's great, this is a great music, and musicianship is equal to or above to anything that they may have been playing in whatever genre they were in.
Right.
I mean, can you imagine anybody that's playing a stringed instrument the first time they hear Tony Rice? I don't care what kind of music they're in. If they hear Tony play, they're going to recognize this guy brought something different to the plate.
Absolutely. He was one of a kind, for sure, and influenced a lot of people, not only in his guitar playing, you know, with his vocals as well, you know. So, you know, Kim Ritchie's doing a track on here. It was a Gordon Lightfoot song, but you know, she heard Tony doing it.
Now, there you go. So that's great. So she's hearing Tony's version of Gordon Lightfoot, which, as I said earlier, I think he sang them better than Gordon. I didn't write him better than Gordon, but I prefer his vocals over Gordon Lightfoot's vocals of his own songs. Tony just had that incredible, gorgeous voice.
Absolutely. And he was distinct. When you heard Tony playing or heard him sing, you knew that it was him.
Within the first few notes, you knew. I want you to, we're just kind of talking in general about this new album with Barry Waldrop and friends, Celebrate Tony Rice. I want you to do an intro into 10 Degrees and Colder, and we'll play that for the audience, and we'll come back. But let's do that, and I'll come back and chat with you some more. Barry Waldrop, thanks so much. Do a little bit of an intro for 10 Degrees and Colder, which everybody recognizes from Tony's.
Yeah, this is Daryl Scott doing the lead vocal on this. John Cowan's actually singing harmony. And it's also a Gordon Lightfoot song. And Daryl, you know, really, he had the idea for this song. He really wanted to do this, and we did our own version of it, and I think it's great. I really love this version of the song.
It is great. Let's play that for the audience. I'll come back and talk to you some more. So there you just heard a very distinctive tune, 10 Degrees and Colder. Again, you mentioned Barry is Gordon Lightfoot, one of his, but it's so great to put it on this album with your twist to it, to a tribute. I want to keep reminding people this is not a cover album. You're not trying to reproduce Tony, but 10 Degrees and Colder, I mean, that's a great song to lay in there with all these people that you have.
Yes, I thought it was a good choice. You know, in the vision, you know, in laying all this out, you know, I'm thinking, I have to think as a producer in addition to being a musician that's on the album as well, and looking at the whole layout of tempos, you know, keys and that kind of thing to where it really flows well in the styles of the song. So you don't, you know, have this song sounding just like this song and that sort of thing. But everything on here is so different. It is a collection of things that are really different, but it all fits together well.
Even, you know, Songs for a Winter Night, which we just passed through the Christmas season, that's a wonderful tune. Another tune that he did on Strictly Guitar, which you don't do here, but he was following John Coltrane on Favorite Things. You can even hear some of the same, which became a Christmas song because of John Coltrane played it that way. Tony's playing. Let me ask you this, since you've gotten, I want to ask you about how you limited it to this many songs. But first I want to ask you this question. What do you think it was about Tony's, what pulled Tony into the Gordon Lightfoot song? Not just the melody, not just the lyrics, but what was it that made Tony so fit into those songs that he chose so many of them to record over his career?
Well, I think, you know, after having a conversation, you know, a long conversation one time with Tony, I really think that he reached for things that hadn't been done. I think that he was influenced a lot and from the jazz world.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think that he wanted to be different. He wanted to be his own, have his own style, and I just think that he reached for those things.
And then right in the middle of all this incredible, it went on for a long, long after that, but all of a sudden he releases Manzanita with no banjo from This Is a Guy Who's in the Bluegrass World. It's like, we're not going to record a banjo, and it's still one of the greatest albums ever made.
I agree. Absolutely. And there are those people that think if you don't have a banjo in the band that it's not bluegrass.
Right.
I totally disagree with
that. I do, too.
I think what makes something bluegrass is the way that it's played, no matter what instrument. If you look at Ricky Skaggs in the 80s, I mean, Ricky Skaggs is playing bluegrass on a Telecaster.
Exactly.
You know, a lot of times you could have, you know, a mandolin, banjo, fiddle, guitar, and an upright bass, and you have all the typical bluegrass instruments, and they're playing Lynyrd Skynyrd songs. Where do we stand now?
Is
it bluegrass because of that instrumentation? No, because you're playing a whole different style on the backbeat, and it's nothing to do with bluegrass.
Well, you nailed it. Barry, you're absolutely nailed. You're nailing all these things so well. I hope people are listening and taking notes, because Barry Waldrop is exactly setting the difference between that was a great illustration. You can have everybody on stage can be what your normal bluegrass band, but they don't have to be playing bluegrass. They can be playing something else. Often they are, and you can have bluegrass without any number of those things that are in banjos, always identified because of Earl. But you can have bluegrass without a banjo, and
absolutely.
That's amazing.
Yes. I always say judge it by what you hear and not what you see.
Yeah, it has to have it has to have that sort of urgency on top of the beat there too, that kind of pulls you forward. I'm not sure how that works physically, but I know that there's even on, so I don't mean tempo, I don't mean fast, but I mean there has to be this play on the beat that almost pulls you forward. I don't know how to explain it. Maybe you can. Maybe I'm crazy, but
no, that's so wild you bring it up, because that what you said makes so much sense, and it's very hard to explain to someone if they don't feel it and they don't get it, because you know I've played with people before, and you're playing something extremely fast, and if you're on top of that beat and you're playing it the way bluegrass is, it's not stressful. It's not
right.
You're not exerting yourself trying to do it. But if you take someone who is not familiar with that, and you're playing it, you know, rhythm guitar players killing themselves trying to keep up because it's just no way to do it.
Right.
You know, it's
right.
Just, so you have to understand the differences. And Vince Gill is a prime example. Vince Gill, he knows how to play bluegrass. He knows how to play everything in the way that it should be played. He knowing how to do that is you know, extremely important. But if you don't hear how that's done and you're able to do it, it's not the same.
No, sure. You're right. You have to feel it. There's a feeling, and we can't put it in words. That's why it's a feeling. Listen, I want you to introduce this song from Vince in a minute, but there's 21 cuts. There's two instrumentals. So my question to you is, how do you limit all of this material available to sample from it, to do this tribute? How many songs did you have? How many did you cut down? How long did it take?
Well, we had the one song, and after when I said I was intending to do an album, so I had 10 songs in mind. So we had the one with John Cowan, you know, featured as the vocalist, and then, you know, I was going to do 9 of the tracks. And then, you know, when we start talking to people, we just had more people wanting to get on board. So it ended up being, was going to be 20 tracks. And then on a couple of songs, you know, the songs that I had picked out for the artist, we started cutting, and then I thought of another song. I'm thinking, you know, Jim Lauderdale, for instance, he's doing Church Street Blues on the album. So we originally had it planned for him to do Summer Wages. So we cut Summer Wages, and, you know, I thought to myself, okay, Church Street Blues has to be on this album.
Yep.
And I think Jim's the guy to sing it. So we did that. So I talked with Jim. He switched to Church Street Blues. And then the Summer Wages, the track was so moving from an emotional standpoint, I just decided to keep that as an extra instrumental.
Yeah, yeah.
Spooner Odom is on that track playing Wurlitzer piano. And me and Tammy Rogers doing guitar and fiddle. And it's Summer Wages on this album. It's one of those songs that, you know, that if you're riding out west in a convertible with the wind blowing, I can just hear that song. It's just one of those songs that you can ride and listen to and feel good.
Yeah. Oh, it's been done beautifully. It's a beautiful, there's two instrumentals, that one and EMD. I want to ask you a little bit about the other instrumental that I'm talking about, that I'm going to talk to you about the label, how people get it. But tell me a little bit about EMD, the only other instrumental on this set that contains 21 cuts.
EMD, I chose that song because from the era, you know, when I was a kid, you know, growing up listening to Tony, and we were going to bluegrass festivals and things like that. And it's just like everybody that I knew at that time, we were all just, you know, fascinated with EMD. And we were all saying, oh, let's play EMD. This is a song we want to jam around and play. And, you know, Dave Grisman, this is one of his tunes that, and Tony was a part of the David Grisman Quintet.
Right.
And all of that just made sense, you know, from, you know, an inspiration that they gave to me as a kid, and then let's putting it back on the album.
They're wonderful, wonderful instrumentals. And I love the idea of what you're doing. You've already explained it so well, but I just keep coming back to saying congratulations because you did it. And thanks for taking on that with the objective that you have in mind is to celebrate Tony, but also bring in so many other musicians, Warren Hayes, so many great people that other people in the bluegrass area may not have thought to look to for entertainment or to listen to. You're doing all that. So before I forget, how do people find this album, Barry Waldrop and Friends, tribute to Tony Rice?
If you want a physical copy at this point, you can go to barrywaldrop.com. And that is Waldrep. But it's available on all the digital download sites at this point. And, you know, so you can download it from Apple Music or Spotify, Pandora, any of those. And you can, like I said, order it from my website if you'd like the physical copy. We're hoping to have vinyl at some point, but it's, you know, it's out of ways on vinyl at this point.
That'd be nice. Is there any way you can conceivably, I guess you could perform, you can't take all these people with you, but I guess you could put together a kind of a nucleus with a band and do some of these songs if people come and see you live in the event that venues ever open to where we feel comfortable doing that. But there's no way. Go ahead.
It is intended to do some live shows with some of these artists. I'd love to do it with everyone at the same time. If that was ever possible, I'd love to do that.
You'd have to have two buses of just people, not equipment. You just for everybody to get. I'm not kidding you, but I want people to go look at this cover and tell me that there's not people on listed as guests and contributing to this that they aren't surprised by. I want people who maybe don't listen to bluegrass, maybe listen to unreal bluegrass, because I want to pull those people in also. Look at the list of guests. It's phenomenal. It's just phenomenal. But yeah, so do you have a schedule for any appearances yet? Or are you just waiting for the new year to come around?
Yeah, it was released on Christmas Eve, so everybody's going through the holidays, and as soon as everybody's back to it, next week I'm sure we'll start scheduling some things and then moving into the new year. So it's going to be a great year ahead.
I hope so.
Promoting this, and it's just a pleasure to be involved, in producing this as well as playing. It's just, it's such a blast.
I didn't mean to not mention your playing, Barry, but there were so many things to cover as far as the topics on the album and the music, but the music instrumental parts are great. You do a great job. I mentioned, I'm looking at my notes here, I mentioned Warren Hayes. That's Wayfaring Stranger I have him connected to. And just, again, for the listeners so they know, Warren Hayes played for a long, long time with the Allman Brothers Band. Government Mule now became, and he's been doing that probably longer than he played with the Allman Brothers Band. But there's another name right there that if you like Government Mule or the Allman Brothers, here's your introduction to Tony Rice, and listen to that version of Wayfaring Stranger. I love the people that you pulled into this. It just really is remarkable.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
I know you feel that way because we've talked about it. So I want you to introduce then for the third cut we'll hear is the Vince Gill cut. You talked about him a little bit. As I'll stay around, do an intro to that, and I will let you go, Barry. Don't let me go without saying thank you so much for appearing on Unreal Bluegrass and being available to do this wonderful project. And I'm looking forward to seeing you out somewhere and recreating some of these sounds. But let's do an intro. You intro.
This track with Vince Gill, it's actually the most traditional bluegrass track on the album, because we definitely wanted to touch on that area that was, mostly straightforward bluegrass. And we got Scott Vestal and Tammy Rogers and John Cowan, myself, on this track. And it's just Vince is playing mandolin and singing lead. Kelly Johnson is actually singing harmony with Vince on this track. And it really goes back to the beginning roots of what I heard Tony do. So this is kind of where it started with me.
Great. And again, Scotty Vestal. This is the name that just appears here. But, Scotty, everybody knows Scotty Vestal, a banjo player, award-winning banjo player. I mostly see him live with Sam Bush Band, which he's been a part of forever and ever and ever. Tammy Rogers. Let's connect to Tammy Rogers. You might know her better from the Steel Drivers, but Tammy writes great songs. She's writing a lot of songs, performs great fiddle, sings great harmony. Again, that's just a small shot at all the people that have contributed to this. So with that introduction to I'll Stay Around with Vince Gill, as you've heard from Barry Waldrop, my guest today, I'll let you go, Barry. I wish you so much success with this album. And, again, congratulations on this undertaking, and you certainly pulled it off well.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks for having me.
All right.
And we'll talk to you again soon.
I'll catch you down the road somewhere.
Absolutely.